really happy to be amongst all of you once again, and I'm very thankful to the team and to you and our seniors and teachers who are assembled here, and also to all the other devotees. Today morning was a call. It was an evident that all of you are performing your the chanting and preaching is going on very nicely. One time when one of Prabhupada's disciples, he did not know that if he goes to some country like China, what should he do? How should he start his preaching? So Prabhupada said, you just go there, rent an apartment and start chanting on your own. Eventually the surrounding will get changed and people will become favorable. So when you speak to them, they will start accepting the process. So I could just understand this today morning when you are coming by taxi and you just told drop us here, he dropped us nearby, and suddenly after paying the fare, he also came out with a $5 note and he said, please offer this to the temple. I was really amazed. So all glories to your preaching. Hari Bol. So this particular verse, Prabhupada has some classic, he has coined various phrases which were unique to his personality. So in this particular purport, one more word which was so striking, it never struck me before yesterday. Mundaner. Has anybody heard this word before? Mundaner. Where he is categorizing all the people of the material world with any material desire by one word, mundaner. Just like we have a father, brother, sister, doctor, engineer, and then a mundaner. Everybody is a mundaner as long as one is not engaged in Krishna consciousness. So the whole purport of us is basically explaining how the difference in the impersonal and the personal features of the Lord. In fact, the impersonal feature, this whole material world is nothing but the part of an expansion of the Mahatattva, which is a dark cloud in the whole effulgence, which just emanates from the Lord. If we see that this dark cloud itself is so expressive by nature, the Mahatattva is the origin of these five elements, and then the other all 15 elements which come thereafter, and the other 4 elements. So in all 24 elements are coming from this Mahatattva, including the mind, the senses and everything. All the colors we see, all the beautiful manifestations we see in this world today is part of that dark cloud. So we can understand that if the impersonal feature of the Lord, of the Mahatattva or the Brahman effulgence, that itself is so expressive and so dynamic, how much more will be the personal feature of the Lord? Therefore, if we see the Srimad Bhagavatam, even in this purport, the verse is just that I am offering obeisances to that person who is the controller. There is not a direct glorification of who is that person. Here Prabhupada begins the purport directly speaking about Golok Vrindavan and Krishna's reciprocation to the pure devotees. This is actually the mood of Srimad Bhagavatam. The first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam itself, like normally there is a build-up of a story, if you are reading a novel or a movie, the conclusion is never told. Have you ever read a novel where it is told and so suspense is open? Or a movie? Have you ever seen such a movie where the end is actually the beginning and there is nothing else to know? never it will be a flop. Such a novel will not even sell unless the whole suspense is maintained. Srimad Bhagavatam is one such literary work where the conclusion and the essence of everything is given in the first verse itself. Bhagavatam basically only deals with one thing, how to get closer to Krishna as a person, not even his impersonal aspect. Therefore we see that even verses which are impersonal, they are so expressive. If it is impersonal, why is the need to be so expressive, isn't it? He is so great, he is dynamic and he controls everything. You can just say, Brahman effulgence, all pervading. Mayavad means like that, there is no need to express anything. But Bhagavatam, even when it is trying to describe the impersonal nature of God, it is so expressive. Because the first verse of Bhagavatam itself begins with what? No. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That is the conclusion. The conclusion of the Bhagavatam is given in the first verse itself. The first verse establishes what is the goal of all philosophical process, what is the goal of one's life. That is established in the first verse itself. And the very next verse, the second verse, establishes the process. Dharma prajita taitavatra paramam nirvatsaranasura. That this four, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, it is totally rejected. And pure devotional service is established as the process. So it's like a reverse way. Flashback. No suspense. So if somebody is wanting to understand God in a philosophical way, then Bhagavatam does not leave any room for doubt. In fact, there is not even a scope to speculate. Interestingly enough, today we are reading this Prabhupada's nectar. How wonderful that devotee said, how to follow the instruction of Krishna. What was that?
Choice.
So what Prabhupada replied? There is no choice. You simply have to do what Krishna said. So Bhagavatam also does not give a choice to living entities, like various other books. It directly just says, this is the conclusion, this is the process, that's all. And then it explains how various devotees are following this process. So the impersonal feature of the Lord, right from the first verse till the end, the Bhagavatam does not, Bhagavatam is exclusively dedicated to Krishna as a supreme personality. This was one more phrase which you never find in any spiritual books throughout the world. Supreme personality of Godhead. You will never find this verse. Material world is common, cosmic manifestation is common, mind, senses, everything is common. But this word, supreme personality of Godhead, it is unique. Only spoken by Prabhupada. So clearly defined. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. And when in this material world, when the Bhagavatam is describing that Krishna is such a beautiful person with just a mundane intelligence, or typically as Prabhupada says, mundaner, when he tries to understand how could such a person be so expressive, so loving, so caring, it is so difficult to understand. The reason being, a living entity in this material world, he does not have a positive experience from any living person. If he has some positive experience with any living person, that means he has just been with that person for a fraction of time. The moment you associate with that person for some point of time, the positive experience has failed. Isn't this the experience of everyone? Can anybody deny this? So nobody has such positive experiences with persons, living entities. So the moment it is said Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, that irritates many spiritualists. Again a person, they just don't want to face this. But Krishna, his personality, and therefore actually they get so irritated as a person that they want to deny any form of personal service or personal worship. What to talk of understanding that Krishna could be a neighbor, could be a friend, could be a son, such perfection, it is not acceptable. And when this is their consciousness, when they see that even as a sadhak or practicing devotional service, when living entities are trying to render some personal service to the Lord, that is considered another form of impersonal behavior. Like the concept of deity worship, which is denied in the various religions of the world. Many people, they say, oh, you follow, you worship dolls, you worship stones. So they cannot understand that this is a personal reciprocation. Because the moment it is said person, it is like not acceptable. The nature of a mundane, what is a mundane actually? Even a demigod worshipper is considered just a mundane. Because mundane intelligence means what? That I should offer as less to any demigod or even Krishna or any higher person. I should offer as less as possible, and I should get in return as much as possible. So this is the way how a mundane person judges everyone. I did little bit, but how much he gave me in return? I just gave him one smile, but then he gave me the whole feast of plate, whole plate of the feast. Little bit of reciprocation, but I get so much. That is a mundane intelligence. Isn't it a very strange phenomenon? What a big contrast. We want to offer little bit to someone and expect so much in return, and then only we'll give a good judgment. And then we say, honestly, I'm telling. Actually, it is total dishonesty because you never had an honest reciprocation. You did not give $1 million and you are getting. You just put $1 in the donation box and you are praying, Krishna, make it $1 million. And then we say that that was an honest judgment. My judgment is honest. This is a typical Kanishka Adhikari who thinks that my way of understanding is the best. So this is actually a mundane. As even many times in the broad aspect, mundane. Even many times devotees also deal with Krishna in such a way as if he is a demigod. Offer little bit and expect too much in return. But he also does that many times. After you do too much, he will give you little bit. He is the smartest of all. So therefore, people cannot understand this aspect of reciprocation of the Supreme. They cannot understand person at all. Every person is expecting too much from others. They fail to reciprocate that way, and that's why they understand that nobody can reciprocate so perfectly. It is impossible. And therefore, even when they see the whole process of deity worship, it is unacceptable to them. How is it that you offer flowers? How is it that you offer food? How is it that you glorify, oh Krishna, these wonderful prayers? How are you sure that you accept the offering? How are you sure that you please it? That is not acceptable. But yet we see, even in the most impersonal feature that way, in the form of a stone, the stone is not as lively as a human being could be, isn't it? So Krishna, even in his form as a deity, as a stone, still the way he reciprocates is so amazing. Even within the Mahatattva is the impersonal manifestation of the God, and whatever comes from there is there definitely not going to be so personal in reciprocation. Like a sole manifestation of the God, Supreme Personality of God. Something which is impersonal, can it give rise to a personal reciprocation? Can it give rise to a personal reciprocation? No. How can date matter of the five elements reciprocal? It's not possible. Therefore, when Mayavadis and impersonalists, they analyze this whole material world, this is how they calculate. That this, all this, this stone, this form of knowledge is made up of stone. Stone comes, so stone is one of the five elements. It is coming from Mahatattva. The origin is impersonal. How can you say that the Lord smiles and dances and laughs and all? It's not possible. Therefore, in the verse, Prabhupada says, the mundanas have insufficient information of even the mundane sky. So what can they think of the spiritual sky? So because they don't understand the Supreme Truth and His nature, even if they travel with the velocity of mind and devise such instruments, they will never be able to even understand it. Is it possible? Therefore we see that even deities, they reciprocate in the pastimes of, this is a summer month actually, according to Vaishnava calendar. Recently Chandan Yatra festival was celebrated all over the world. We see how a personal reciprocation is done. And what is the pastime? It's a very real phenomenon, not even millions of years old or something mentioned in the Bhagavata. Just few hundred years ago, 700 years ago, when Madhavendra Puri was in Vrindavan, he used to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one of the forms of Krishna. And he was doing that service so lovingly and so diligently that one day Krishna came in his dream. And during the summer season, I told to Madhavendra Puri that it is so hot, why don't you apply some chandan paste to my body? And not any ordinary chandan, the chandan which is got from the Malaya hills. If you apply that, then my body will remain so cool. So Madhavendra Puri, he left Vrindavan and came towards those Malaya hills, happened to be towards Jagannath Puri. So he came over there. And meanwhile, on the way, he came to a village called Remuna, now it is known as Remuna. And then he fought to fall for a while, and meanwhile there he was observing the worship of Gopinath which is done there. And he saw that he was so much in love with God, with such a loving reciprocation. Like a lover, wherever he goes, suppose you love someone and you are on a tour to US or Australia, what do? You bring something for there, from there. And this is a gift for you from Australia, from America, from India, from Pakistan. Sorry, no gift from there. But you always want to bring something from that place. So Madhavendra Puri, because he is in love with Krishna, there he is thinking that, oh, how are they worshipping Krishna? And he sees that Gopinath is being worshipped by this pots of heat. And first parts of khir were offered every day. And he came to know that this is considered one of the most elegant and best offerings of Gopinath in the day. And he developed a desire when the khir was being cooked that somehow if I taste this khir, and if it is so nice, I will also make the same khir for my Krishna and Vrindavan. And the moment he thought that, he realized that he made a mistake. Why? Because in the process of deity worship, when you are making a food, you don't relish it first. You don't think to enjoy it first. You first want to offer it to Krishna and then take it. Right? So with that perspective, he considered himself as an offender. And he said, now I won't even look at this khir. I won't even taste it. And he left that temple. And in seclusion, he started chanting the holy names of the Lord. In the night, in the dream of the pujari of the deity Gopinath, Gopinath came personally and told that, my dear pujari, there is one devotee called Madhavendra Puri who has come here to see the process of worship here. He is on his way to collect chandan for myself because I am feeling hot. I told him to bring some chandan paste. And he wanted to taste his kheer offering. But because he thought about it before I could take it, he has considered himself very as a fallen crow. So he has left this place. You please go and give him this pot of hay. So this pujari was surprised. Which pot? He said, I have hid one of the pots which you need for me. I have hid it. He told also where I am hid. So imagine the deity is speaking to the pujari. The pujari goes, he collects that pot and then reaches out to Madhavendra Puri and tells that Gopinath personally sent that he personally hid this. He personally stole this pot just for you, just for yourself. Since then, the deity of Gopinath is called Sheepshore Gopinath. We have heard butter thief, but sweet rice thief Krishna. Krishna the sweet rice thief. How he reciprocated with his devotee. Madhavendra Puri was so happy that he not only ate the kheer, but he was also eating the pot every day, little by little. Just like when we go to holy places, we collect some dust, isn't it? And some devotees put a particle, and then they pray, I should not get kidney stone. So just imagine, that is our consciousness. A little bit of dust extra, we get scared. That maybe something should not go wrong. And then we try to philosophically console ourselves. No, because it is divine and it's okay, that is purification. But deep within our hearts we are scared. But Madhavendra Puri did explain, he was relishing every particle of that pot. And he kept it for many days, just because he wanted to eat little bit every day. So we see how even the apparent deity or the stone form, which is kind of impersonal, for those people who have no knowledge of the depths of the personality of Krishna and the Bhagavatam, how they derive in the process, how a deity can actually personally reciprocate. In Mayapur there is this place called Ambika Talna, where there are these most wonderful deities of Gauridas Pandit. So Gauridas Pandit was a very, very great devotee, an advanced and elevated devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. And he used to render so much loving service that Mahaprabhu and Nityananda would come again and again to his place. So one such time when Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, they were there at his place, they had nice philosophical discussions, nice loving talks about the glories of Krishna, the pastimes, the esoteric pastimes. They discussed everything. And Gauridas Pandit had made such a nice feast for them to enjoy. And he offered the feast. And after sumptuously having the feast, Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda said, "Well, my dear Gauridas Pandit, now we are completely satisfied. Now it is time for us to leave." And when they said that, Gauridas Pandit was deeply touched, moved in the heart. He said that, "My Lord, how can you leave me? It is not possible. I cannot imagine that you are going away from this house. So you please stay for some more time." So Mahaprabhu and Nityananda said, "Since long time you are telling, see, please stay some more time." Try to understand that this particular life where we have come, this particular avatar, we have come to deliver so many people. We have to reach out to so many people. We cannot keep spending all the time here. So Gauridas Pandit said, "That is your problem, I don't know. But you cannot leave this place. I cannot survive without you." So Mahaprabhu and Nityananda said, "See, we have to leave. You have to think of a formula or a way that we have to go and reach out to people. Do you think so many people are waiting for this message of love of Godhead, the holy names of God?" So Gauridas Pandit said, "Okay, then do something. Why don't you give me a deity of yourself, of you and Nityananda, so that I'll worship them every day. And if when you have given me, it will be like a memento, what you say, a loving memory by which, by worshipping them, I'll be remembering you. So, Mahaprabhu and Nityananda were confused. They had never heard that even while living you can actually create your own deity. Normally deities are created once that personality is no longer physically available. You don't have, except in Myron Prasad's museum, you don't have living models of living personality. You don't have models of living personalities, especially stone deities. So, or any stone, metal, wood, you don't have those deities. So Mahaprabhu said that it is not possible. And how can we make our own deities? And that too you are telling us only, that we only make. That is even more embarrassing. That I will make my own deity and say, now you worship them. It is not possible. So Gauridas Pandit said, okay, then it's your problem. You cannot go. So then Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, they thought for a while and they thought that that's the only way that we can go out from this place and reach out to others is actually make our own deity. So Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu oversaw the entire carving of their own deities, and by their own hands they actually gifted to Gauridas Pandit and told that now you please have them and worship them and feed them sumptuously and do all that what you do or want to do it to me. Everything will reach to me personally. I will personally reciprocate with you through these deities. And they had an altar, so Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, they actually put the deities of their own on the altar and offer obeisances. What an embarrassing moment. After they did that, they were about to leave. And Gauridas Pandit said, Gauridas Pandit thought, so he was feeling very sad actually. I suppose two people are in love with each other, the lover will say, you take my photograph. But still when the lover goes, that person still feels the separation, although he has an object of to remember that. So Gauridas Pandit felt deep separation from the Lord, thinking that now they are going. So Gauridas Pandit thought to actually trap Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu in their own philosophy. He said, my dear Lord, I have heard that there is from you only, that there is no difference between worshipping them and worshipping you. There is no difference between feeding them and feeding you. Both of you are exactly same, isn't it? So Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, yeah, exactly. Whatever you do to them, we are the same. See, if both of you are exactly the same, you stay and let them go. So, now Chaitanya and Nityananda are thinking, this is really intelligent. I am trying to checkmate me in my own philosophy. So, but Krishna is the giver of intelligence, Dadami Buddhi Yogantam, this is in the Bhagavad Gita, and he is the one who provides intelligence. So if he can give intelligence, he can act even smarter, isn't it? So both look at each other and smile, and they accept Gauridas proposal. They said, okay, you want us to stay, and you want the deities to go? Gauridas said, yes. They say, are you sure? They say, yes. So Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, they both walk up to the altar and they stand with their arms raised and the deities start walking away from the door. And when this happens, Gauridas suddenly gets confused that the Lord is trying to trick me. But the Lord has taken the form of deity, now the deities are moving. Then he says, one minute, please wait. I am now sure, Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, you go and you please come back and stay. So the deities come back on the altar. And Mahaprabhu and Nityananda are out there to go. When they are just about to leave the house again, Gauridas says, please wait for a second. And this time I am 100% sure, you please stay and you please go. So the deities on the altar, they start walking away and Mahaprabhu and Nityananda again come back to the altar. But whenever Mahaprabhu and Nityananda came to the altar, they actually took the form of the which is most suited at the altar. Which is what? To be like a deity, like a statue. They cannot reciprocate. Because people will be bewildered. There is no problem with pure devotees. But people in general who have very less faith, if they start seeing this, they will get bewildered. They will feel that there is some animatronics going on. So this kept happening for so much, so long time. Whenever the deities were about to go, he would tell you, please come back. And whenever Mahaprabhu and Nityananda were actually about to leave the house, he would tell you, please come back. And this kept happening so many times that at one point of time, Gauridas Pandit actually forgot which are the real ones and which are the deities. So then finally Gauridas Pandit said, Mahaprabhu, now I am convinced. Both of you decide which two want to remain, other two can go. So mutually four of you come together and decide. So he was convinced that whoever is going to stay is going to fully reciprocate. So then but at least two of you stay and other two can go. So then finally the deities, they walk up to the altar and they say, Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda go out to participate in the Harinam Sankirtan to spread the holy names of the Lord. Those deities are still there at Amrita Kanya. Almost 1.5 or 2 feet size deities are there. You can even still see them, just 500 years old, 600 years old. Imagine, not some scriptural text, such live reciprocation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And not only that, they were so expressive that even that at one point of time Gauridas Pandit was making an offering to the Lord and the devotees were singing kirtan. And Gauridas Pandit did the offering, and during the offering he closed the curtain. So he felt something suspicious. He felt that maybe something is wrong behind the curtains. So he opened the curtain and saw that God Nityananda was not there. Only the empty plates, the full plates were there, but the altar was empty. And he said, what has happened now? And he went outside to see that God Nityananda were dancing in the kirtan party. Because that was Mahaprabhu basically. That was his mood, that wherever there is a singing and chanting of the holy names going on, he would actually participate. So those deities were so reciprocative, they would go with us Pandit. At one point of time, he also took a stick just to punish them. Come back on the altar, I am telling you. I am warning you, otherwise I'll beat you. And the deities will say, we are sorry, we are coming back and this time on the altar. So therefore, in the first paragraph of Prabhupada, therefore he is saying this. There are two sides of the transcendental manifestation of the Supreme Lord. One is of He as a constant companion, He as personal to the devotees, He reciprocating in such a personal way. In one of the lectures where Prabhupada was speaking about what is the greatness of this Supreme Personality, that He is greater than the greatest, Anuranayan, Mahato Mahiyan, and the smaller than the smallest. But He gave a more subtle explanation of what is smaller than the smallest. He said, this personality of Krishna, who in the first canto of Bhagavatam, where he is described as one whom fear himself personified fear fears, yet vibheti swayam bhayam. The personification of fear himself is afraid of Krishna, but that person is afraid of the stick of Mother Yashoda when Mother Yashoda is running after that. Prabhupada says this is called smaller than the smallest. Although he is so great as a person, he is so humble, he is so normal, that even a small tiny stick can make him afraid. But only when it is in the hand of a pure devotee. And not that he is just acting, he is naturally afraid. What a beautiful verse in the first canto that it explains that when Krishna is afraid of Mother Yashoda, the acharyas are giving such details of his personality. Not that he is just running away, but he is running away in fear. He is shivering. And while running away, he is also looking at the back. That where is my, what is the proximity? like thief and police, you have to be, if the proximity is less, you will actually panic even more, and he was crying. And his tears would actually disturb the ointment applied, the kajal. What do you call it in English? The mascara. That would get spread all over the face. Imagine the Srimad Bhagavatam is getting into such details of the personality. If Krishna would not be such a wonderful person, would the Srimad Bhagavatam describe it such details? Normally nobody in our house also would ever describe. And the child is crying. But no, is it crying or is the muscle is spread over the face, and then while crying, when he rubs it, it becomes even more beautiful, and look at our child. Nobody talks this way. Imagine when Srimad Bhagavatam is talking like this, when Vyasadeva is talking, you can imagine what kind of person that personality must be, Sri Krishna. That the devotees who are in love with Krishna, they are in love in such a way that no one has ever experienced such a love. And therefore the last paragraph where Prabhupada is giving an understanding that one who is dazzled by the effulgence cannot know, and therefore the Ishopanishad prays, O Lord, please shift your dazzling effulgence, behind which is this wonderful personality of you who is residing. So kindly protect me by showing your real face. Please therefore remove the veil of Brahma Jyoti rays so that I can see your form of eternal bliss and knowledge. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. If anyone has any questions or comments, please.
When
Mayavadis are worshipping the deities, their understanding is that because I am a conditioned soul, I need the process of deity worship to purify myself. Once I am purified, I no longer need this process. So deity worship is just kind of like a tool. It's not a life. When Gauriya Vaishnavas or when Vaishnavas from this four bona fide sampradaya, when they are doing deity worship, they don't do deity worship that because I am contaminated, I will be purified, and once I am purified, I no longer need the deity. That is not the perspective. The perspective is that Lord is a person here. The process of deity worship certainly purifies me, but it does not stop there. After my purification, I start reciprocating with the same Lord in more dynamic ways. And the whole the deity worship in impersonal philosophy in India, it is like that, in the Vedic scriptures. That it is essential for one's own purification, that's all. They also give an analogy, just as when you are struck with a thorn, how do you remove that thorn? You use another thorn or a needle. And once that thorn is out, what do? You throw both of them away, but they are not needed. So the process of deity worship in personal state is like that. Whether they are, so they not only nursing, they worship Vishnu, they worship Narayan, But the whole process is that, okay, I am Narayan, but I don't know. So actually there is one form of Narayan whom I worship perfectly, and by that I become beautified and I realize that both are same. So therefore they don't even feel ashamed to have their own deities, to have their own names. They put their name in front of the Lord. They equate themselves with the Lord. If they would have actually understood what actually is deity worship, they will never ever think that I and God can be one. So that is the basic understanding of deity worship in personal schools.
All our Ishmael countries, they have Prabhupada Murthy. Some non-devotees ask me, how come you... Prabhupada Murthy's size is bigger than the native size sometimes. How do you worship Prabhupada?
This is a managerial standard to be followed, that the deity should not be bigger than the actual deity. But in any case, that is very clear. If your question is based on institution, then it is very clear that Prabhupada is Prabhupada, Krishna is Krishna. That Prabhupada so categorically defined it, categorically. He never made this confusion. When his own disciples said, you are God, he actually banished them. They know this famous pastime. And those people whom he banned then, they were not ordinary people. They were the people who actually set up the initial preaching phase. Prabhupada could take such a big step. He was never sentimental about it. So this may be a physical managerial discrepancy at some place where the deity of Prabhupada is bigger, but that does not mean that Prabhupada ever wished all the devotees there certainly are in that perspective that, oh, because he is more prominent than Krishna that way. That is a managerial discrepancy which can be removed. It's not a deviation from scripture that way. In fact, the whole, even the Prabhupada, when he is in front of the deity, the Vyasasan is slightly lower than the altar. That is maintained. Prabhupada always ensured that. And the Vyasasan of the speaker is even lower than the Vyasasan of Prabhupada. So these are certain standards which are observed. But in case somebody sitting on a higher chair, then does not mean that he or she is intending that now I am greater than Krishna or something. Okay. That is very clear in ISKCON. In ISKCON you will never have confusion about these things. Who you are, what is your relationship with God, and who is God, these three. Sambandh, Abhinaya and Prayojan are so clear in ISKCON. The first day you come in contact. We are insignificant jivas. Krishna is the Supreme Personality and relation is love and service. There is no was this your question?
Sometimes we find that, let's say a particular person, by nature is very passionate. So sometimes, you know, when we perform kirtan, or when we hear nice philosophical discussions, and also with regards to deity worship, so sometimes when we sing in front of Krishna, offer prayers, because of this passionate nature, sometimes, you know, you feel you're on a high, you know, you feel very passionate, that, you know, and sometimes you turn to sentiment in that sense.
We feel like we are yogi.
You know, because of the nature, the passionate nature that the person has. So, in that sense, but how would you differentiate? How would one differentiate that it's sentiment or actually
this, the feeling is actually based on the consciousness.
How would one differentiate that?
So one cannot differentiate by judging on that particular activity itself, whether it is genuine or whatever. But for oneself, we can understand throughout the day how we behave, how we are affected by various situations. For one who is actually purely absorbed and he experiences such emotions, actually all of us do experience very pure consciousness and emotions, but for a very small fraction of time. And that also very rarely, not every day. Once in a while it happens that our consciousness is there at that stage, that we feel that Krishna is as if I am totally connected and there is no need of anything. And we just pray that may that consciousness maintain for eternity. But it disappears and does not come for years also later. But every living entity, Krishna gives that experience to every living entity. That is the reason why we all are still in devotional service. That something we keep feeling once in a while. But it does not last long. If it were genuine, it should last all the time. If it's not genuine, we can understand. If it has not lasted, that means everything was slightly overcome by sentiments. It is not a pure expression. So enthusiasm and excitement is correct. That should not be, that enthusiasm and excitement of devotional service should not be termed as pure devotional service. So, one time Jayadev Maharaj was telling, that is called pure devotee syndrome. Sometimes that happens in talk. He was telling, when a devotee comes to Hare Krishna, he thinks that now within few days he will convert the entire world in Krishna consciousness. When he hears this philosophy for the first time, he is so convinced, now, that's it. I will change the face of Kali Yuga now. But by the time he goes to back to home, when he's tired, he wants to sleep. Then he needs that 8 hours of rest with an air conditioner. Then morning he needs nice milk and badam and rabri or in an ISKCON style of food. He needs those things for lunch. Okay, that means there was a sentimental thought which he had in the heart. It is good. But one should not think that is pure devotional service. We should be very happy and satisfied that this is a very good excitement and enthusiasm. And this is a nice way to channelize one's own passion. There is nothing wrong in that. If one is so passionate, as long as that is being channelized in the right direction, there is no... That's what Krishna told to Arjuna. You are a passionate person, you are a warrior. So you have to fight. You cannot be peaceful. So better fight for the right reason. So, if he does not jump and dance and be excited here, he will be there in a discotheque. Or in a pub. And he'll disturb someone. Better release all your passion in kirtan. So if you don't get much opportunity, you should come together and they jump and dance. And nobody should look at each other. Dance as if nobody is looking at you. This is a saying in English from the personal. Dance as if nobody is looking at you. In one of our college programs, when we have the Janmashtami, so many people just come only for the Janmashtami day because there is a 10 course feast and all the students, they pay 20-30 rupees as Janmashtami donation. So they want to make use of that 20 rupees. In college time, it's always like that, you know. Every single money you have invested, you ensure that it comes 10 times in return. So the students, they come. And when the kirtan starts, earlier we saw that they will not dance properly. So then we switched off all the lights, completely dark. Then everybody started dancing, wild and all the passion coming out. And then slowly we switch on one light at a time. And then they feel that, oh, all of us are dancing. Because everyone feels that somebody is watching me. So, and when that passion is exhausted by dancing in the kirtan, then they say, Guruji, when is the next program? When are your bhajan programs? So that is the effect. In material world, when the passion is channelized in matter, it causes, it creates exhaustion. Not only physical, we are not talking of physical exhaustion is there, but there is mental exhaustion. Then you are just fed up of it. But in devotional service, You may be physically exhausted, but you won't be mentally and emotionally exhausted. You emotionally become enriched. So it's very good if the passion is engaged in spirituality. It's a very positive thing. So in that case, if somebody sees new person that is becoming a pure devotee, he should be told, yes, you are actually becoming a pure devotee. No need to make him feel that Prabhu is your excitement. This is just excitement. So many times devotees do that. If you are jumping now, don't jump much, otherwise you jump every time if you are really so excited. Better to encourage every person with whatever he wants to offer. If he wants to offer ignorance, let him offer. Means he comes to the lecture and he will fall asleep. That is also no problem. There is one, that's a devotee. Since past 8 months he comes to the program, we are taking program, I take, and he will come and he will sit right in front. And he comes and first he will put, make his whole posture erect like Ashtanga Yoga. He will go in the Jnana Mudra. He will close his eyes. One day I told him that, why do you sit like this? If you are coming to listen to it, say, no, I am actually fully attentive to each and every word of yours. So he sits like this and he keeps smiling and laughing, and whatever the mood of the lecture is going, that expression you can see on his face. And but after some time he goes in samadhi. Then whether it is tragedy in the story or fun, he got off. So it's now 8 months, he's chanting around 8 rounds regularly, but this is the way he participates in lecture. So I thought nobody should correct him. Let him fully offer himself the way he wants to. It's not acceptable. Ignorance also. In that condition he's chanting 8 rounds, imagine. So you never know how one's passion is channelized and how it purifies. As long as it is not disturbing others, it's all good. Yes,
ma'am.
Now you have GT at the base. As practicing devotees, we normally don't have those Pratishtha type duties. And normally we keep Jagannath Bhadra, Subhadra and Gauranga just because we are scared to, we are not committed to perform that level of worship. We don't have that confidence. So there's nothing to fear. And plus you are a student. So Krishna will give that consideration also. Means a bachelor, sorry. Krishna will not expect that much. Gauranga, Jagannath Bhadra, Subhadra, anyways, very, very merciful. They don't take offenses. Yes, we don't offer Prana Pratishtha type worship. But that procedure we don't do for house building. It is plain. Loving installation. So there is no problem. But one should be conscious. That is the whole process of deity worship, that we try to deal with them in a way of personal reciprocation as much as possible as a person. So that helps us to get closer and try to understand Krishna as a personality. And they also reciprocate. They have nothing to be scared or... That defeats the whole purpose of deity worship. Because we are scared of the actual personality of Godhead, if Krishna actually comes, we will be confused whether to, can we actually follow his instruction. Suppose Krishna comes here, how many of us have this confidence, Krishna please instruct me? Can we tell this? Think within your heart. How many of us have this confidence? Shishya Seham Shadi Maham Tram Prakanya. Can we say this word? Because you never know what Krishna is doing. Isn't it? But in, still, in this condition, we want that Krishna should be there to accept our worship and listen to us. So Krishna says, okay, as a person, I am coming in the form of a deity. So he is coming down at our level so that he can reciprocate with us in the way we want. And he is ready to accept. If he is like a living person there at the altar and you don't feed him whole day, you will feel guilty. The way he will look at you. And you are eating nice fruit, coming from office, taking some juice and Krishna is looking. That's not possible for us. So, therefore the deity worship is in a merciful way that with our limitations Krishna is ready to offer himself. And nothing to fear. But one should be conscious. Just because there is nothing to fear, becoming religious is not good. That's all. On the way to Malaya Hills, he stopped at Ramona.
Oh, sir.
Is there
another Malaya Hills in India?
No. So if it is Malaysia, then it comes on the way. No problem. Sri Lanka and all. But there is nothing contradictory. Even if it is Malaysia, in India there is nothing, no place for Malay Hills. Because even if it is, it would have been there. Now the names have changed. You know? Many places they are not no longer known like that. Additionally, I am also not aware of which Malay Hills, whether it was Malaysia or what. It could be Malaysia. Yeah. If it is there, then Malaysia falls on the way. Ramuna falls on the way to Malaysia. From Vrindavan to Jagannath Puri, that is Calcutta. So we stand, then we take a flight to KL. Though there is no visa problem. Actually in Brahma Jyoti there is no activity. There is just a feeling of eternity. That nobody can disturb my existence at any moment, at any point of time. Because in material world, see this is Brahma Jyoti is very important only with the perspective of material world. What is a material world? It's a place of misery. Place of constant misery and insecurity, and you, what is your nature? It should be full of joy. Imagine what a contrast. Full misery and full of joy. Can they ever be compatible? That existence is always threatened in the form of time and death. So in Brahma Jyoti, the first aspect, the basic need of the living entity, the need to exist eternally, that is taken care of. So when the person realizes Brahman feature of his own personality, he becomes happy just by this, not happy, just a feeling of security that I can exist eternally. That itself gives him so much peace that the whole anxiety of this material world is lost forever. But because there is no activity and the nature is to love, therefore he falls, because in Brahma Jyoti, whom do you love? You cannot love the light and effulgence. You can be happy that, okay, in the darkness, Mahatattva is a dark cloud. Dark cloud means not only physically dark, but dark out of ignorance. So if you are in a dark room and that is creating uncertainty, that like somebody is coming and some noise is coming, maybe somebody is coming from the back or front or top, it creates an uncertain feeling. So moment somebody switches the light, it's all light, and then you feel confident. Brahma Jyoti is just like that. The darkness of ignorance is dispelled in the effulgence of the Lord. So there is no problem. But then if there is no one, what will you do with that empty room and only full of light? That is another big problem. So therefore the living entity then falls down in his need to love and reciprocate, loving reciprocation with Krishna. That is the only reason why a person falls down. That is because there is no activity in the Brahma Jyoti except for contemplating on the Supreme Personality of God, which he has knowledge. Because we are too much anxious here, the only definition we can understand of spiritual only is it is free of anxiety. That is one of the reasons why it's such. In spiritual world there is anxiety. There is lots of anxiety. Imagine when Krishna was there, I think we discussed this. As long as Krishna was not born, Mathura and Gokul and all the beautiful and peaceful places. The moment Krishna was born, every day there was a demon attacking. So in spiritual world also there are demons. It is explained, those demons are there just to create excitement in the pastime. They are not a threat as they were in this material world. So Krishna is just to create that excitement and fun. But at that time, there is some anxiety. My God, spiritual world. Demon comes there, you know, where is demon came from? Krishna promised everything when I was in the material world in Bhagavad Gita and everything. So Krishna, that excitement is created. Is this true? And suddenly Krishna will come and kill. Ah, no. It's impossible. That feature of excitement is not mundane. It is for the pleasure of Krishna. And then, so if one is thinking there is no anxiety, it's not like that. Mother Yashoda is so anxious whether Krishna has taken food or not. Here we get paid so much, his body is now frail, we should eat something. That anxiety, where is Krishna? He has not yet come. Anxiety of the falling down is not there as a conscious, as a prominent aspect. Because in the first place, if we were in the spiritual world, how we could fall down? If once going to the spiritual world we never fall down, then why from the spiritual world we ever came down, isn't it? So the acharyas give this example that you will never fall down because you have had the experience of being in this material world now. And because you have had the experience, you will not want to come back. But you have the free will. A living entity's ego is considered to be as powerful as the Lord. Why? Because you can actually deny God by your own ego. means you can challenge God. When can you challenge someone? When you think that you are equal to Him. So the free will is almost as powerful as God, in one sense. If you choose, you can come. It's like, have you been to local trains in Bombay? So suppose you are traveling in a, you are traveling through local trains and going from, if you have Bombay local train from Woodlands to Changi, and you are traveling every day, and then one particular day somebody gives you a Toyota and says, now every day you go, you travel by Toyota. Now, because you have already had the experience of that train, you can really appreciate what a Toyota means. So will you ever go back to that train? Once you know that effectively that time, energy, everything is safe, you will never go. But does that mean that you will never go as a compulsion? No, you may choose to say, oh, I want to go, let me see. Let me try, maybe there will not be much rush this time. You can try. So the living entity has such a nasty experience of trying to become God in this world. He's frustrated in all the 84 life species. And in each species, koti koti pera, Tukaram Maharaj says. In each species, lakhs of times in each species, after that amount of experience, you really become an experienced person. You are like a CEO of this material world then, once you go there. It's highly experienced personality. How much 84 lakh species experience, plus every species lakhs of times. So after that experience, you will never leave the spiritual world, at whatever cost. But at any point of time, living entity wants to do that, that choice is there. So Krishna is not speaking that you will lose your free will once you come there. That is that. But you become so fixed up that you will not come to God. Therefore the experience of the material world always exists even in the spiritual world as a bad dream. At the moment you at all you try to think also, it's reminded it was such a nasty dream with your world. But that does not cause any disturbance to your activities there. That does not cause anxiety. Because you know it's insignificant. When one goes back to the spiritual world, he realizes that only for a fraction of a time he was in the material world. All the time he was in the spiritual world, just for few seconds he was there. But those few seconds were really deadly. Like when you are falling down, no? Suppose you have a parachute but you don't know. And you are falling down, you are totally in panic for those 2 seconds. Suddenly the parachute opens. And you are protected. But those 2 minutes, next time somebody will say, do you want to have that experience? With not even knowing that you have a protection. Those 2 minutes will be really fearful. Although the whole day, all the year you are comforted. You don't want to think of that experience where you are just facing death. It does not scare you, but you are quite protective of that. Grantrashima Bhagavatam ki Gataupadashi
Jai Sri Jagannath Prabhu ki.